Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight talking about some of the top stories of the week. We've got a look at D.C. history today. Ben's Chili Bowl celebrates 65 years. The March on Washington's 60th anniversary is this weekend. D.C. flooding issues. What the CDC says about guns and children, former President Trump and the Washington Commanders in preseason command. My guests are Sam Ford, Washington Bureau Chief for WJLA-TV, and Hamil Harris, reporter with the Washington Informer. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sam, Hamil, thank you both for joining the conversation. Guys, are you there? Sam, Hamil, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, there we go. Okay.
Right,
yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, man. I thought both of you guys were stuffing your faces down at Ben's.
No, man.
Well, now I didn't stuff, but I was down there. Yeah. And a lot of people were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
You said been there, done that, Hamil.
Too many times. Back door to the front door.
How about that? Okay, so Sam, before we talk about the history, what did you see down there when you were there today?
It was very nice, you know, just a very good spirit. What they said was that the people in the community, basically you show up in the 1200 block of U Street, and, you know, the food was free. Of course, they had a program to start it off. The city brought the police cars and the DPW dump trucks to block off that block, and people showed up from everywhere. And, you know, I'd ask people, you know, when was the first time you ate at Ben's? 1967. Or, you know, I'm 73 years old. I've been eating at Ben's as long as I can remember. So you had a lot of that stuff. And, of course, a lot of sort of, I would call, celebrity folks showed up. There was Doug Williams of the former Washington Redskins, the Commanders. You had Kathy Hughes of WOL Radio and Sheila Johnson. So it was really interesting, you know, particularly focusing on successful women, because Virginia Ali, who with her husband started this store in 1958, she was 24 years old. She will be 90 in December.
Wow,
and
yeah.
She is still going, and so, you know, a wonderful family. They have Ben's there, and then they've got other stores and places in, like, you know, the sports arenas where they sell, and also, apparently, yeah, I've bought them before. You can go to certain stores, Giant in particular, and I think Costco, and buy Ben's half smokes right there in the counter. So.
That's really interesting, Hamil, that, yes. You know, such a small idea, you know, that business idea. As the story goes, I understand that they had their life savings of $5,000 back in 1958 and started, Ben's, and it just blew up from there. And I think the thing that's so amazing is that they haven't stopped growing.
And you know one thing, Harold, was so important. Let's remember this. There was a time when you had people of color could not go to a restaurant. They couldn't go to fancy places. They couldn't go to any place because of their race. And Mr. Ben, they opened a place that was part of the Green Book. People across the country trying to get from the South to the North knew that Ben's Chili Bowl was a place to eat your breakfast, your lunch. And I never forget that, even though I wasn't there. But again, I used to work at the Afro next door, down the street, right next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. So again, this was a place that spans decades, generations, for so many people. Martin Luther King, all the people, you know, Duke Ellington. So that's why we celebrate, because this is human history. This is legacy.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's one of the things that anybody who is a native or who has been here for a considerable amount of time has at least popped their head in there. I remember when you know, when I was a kid and my mother and my father told me, you know, that when, you know, when they were dating, that they had spent time in Ben's Chili Bowl. And I think there are so many stories like that, and it's, you know, and now of course it's not just the meat, they've got the vegetarian thing going on. Of course they have their famous chili. I like the spicy half smoke without, you know, without the chili, but it's less about the food and more about them being, you know, Sam, a part of the rich history of Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, if you want to know history of Washington, D.C., talk to Virginia Ali because she has lived it, and she will tell you about Martin Luther King eating in Ben's Chili Bowl or Stokely Carmichael eating in Ben's Chili Bowl. And then, of course, in 1967, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, the riot started about two blocks away from Ben's, there at 14th and U, and it spread all over the place. But one of the things that Virginia said that they didn't do, and apparently with the city's blessing, they didn't close. And so, therefore, they never got looted. And then as this, you know, riot continued, you had tired cops and tired rioters, and they would take a break from rioting and come in and eat at Ben's. And then they'd go back out and, you know, do whatever. But, yeah, it was one of these central places where people came. And it still, to some degree, is. I remember we went over there when we wanted to get opinions on the O.J. verdict. We went to Ben's because a lot of people were there watching the proceedings. And it is, in many ways, you know, a local place that it's D.C.
Yeah, and like you were saying, after the riots or during the riots in 68, you know, my dad was an officer in the D.C. National Guard, and he even spoke about that same thing that you talked about, that, that, you know, they did, you know, they had makeshift barracks in a laundromat. And then at one point during that, you know, that long time during that D.C. National Guard occupation of D.C., yeah, he had chance to go to Ben's Chili Bowl. I don't know what he got, knowing my father was probably chili, but you know, but what do you think is the legacy, you know, moving forward for Ben's Chili Bowl? As I said, Hamil, they've not stopped growing. So what, you know, years from now, you know, what do you think it'll be?
It's a legacy of love and service, because I give you an example. One day Miss Ali was robbed, and I was in there, and before she could even, and she would say, just don't worry about it. Do you know, before she could even move about 5 feet from the counter, $200 was dropped in that little glass thing. The people collected money because they just didn't want Miss Ali and that whole institution to be tarnished. And I think, you know, you see now you have as many whites there as blacks. You have people because she just knows how to love people regardless of color, you know, or in spite of color. And so, you know, I just think that's a legacy from the famous and the not so famous, you know?
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. I want to move on now that you guys have had your fill. Did you get something to eat down there, Sam?
No, I didn't, because I was busy. You know,
yeah, you were reporting.
6 o'clock show.
Ethics.
And in fact, I had a wonderful conversation with her youngest son, you know, talking about, you know, just life and what they do. One of the things he was saying, you know, they feed a lot of homeless people, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he said when they come in, he says, you know, you just got to be respectful. You can't just talk to us anyway, but we're going to take care of you. So it was just really nice. And then, of course, after we finished, we decided to stop and get something, but it was over. So I missed out.
I'm going to report you as an ethics violator, Sam, to the news director.
I didn't eat anything. I wasn't there.
You know, another big event, the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington is Saturday. And, you know, Hamil, you've covered this a lot, both of you, yes, obviously. Sir. You know, I have, you know, as well. I think one of the more interesting ones was the most recent one, which was during the pandemic, when people still showed up about 3 years or so ago, people still showed up to talk about police brutality, discrimination, jobs, voting, and, you know, and the like. What do you think this 60th anniversary will mean, Hamil? Do younger people still consider this a relevant issue? I'm not talking about the activists, but I'm talking about the people outside of activism.
I do believe that. I've been writing in the Informer a lead up to this march. Every week I try to do two stories on the march in the faith community. And I think young people, as one that taught at Howard University this past year, I'm proud of them, young people. I think young people are looking for a reason to have substance. I know my daughter is, and the rest of them. I think this movement has to go beyond just memory building and reflections. I've been hearing that theme for the past few days, the past few weeks, really. And so, again, they've been organizing. And remember, we kind of put Dr. King in a nursing home during his tenure, but he was a young man in his 20s and 30s. So, again, this movement, Eleanor Holmes Norton was a Yale law student. So it's never been a movement for older people at the time of the initial movement. So going forward, to me, this is just a clarion call for activism as we go forward. And it's so important. And again, the churches played a critical role back in those days. You couldn't stay in the Marriott Marquis because there was none. You stayed on the pews of the church. They fed you. People loved you from their homes. So again, that's the question. Do we have that community of love and activism that's homegrown and grassroots?
Yeah. You know, I was about to say, you know, Sam, that so many of the issues that are constantly a part of the march now are like a mulligan stew, but that probably wouldn't be culturally accurate. Maybe it's more like a Creole gumbo.
Yeah.
You know.
Harold, I just got back from the National Association of Black Journalists convention in Birmingham, and it was really an appropriate place for it. Just amazing because, you know, Birmingham was such a center of activity. And one of the things that you think about were the civil rights warriors. Basically, they're gone. You know,
yeah.
There's one left. And I don't know if he was, I don't think he spoke at the March on Washington. He very well might have been there. And that's Andrew Young. And he was at the NABJ convention. And he said to us black journalists, he says, you owe the people of Birmingham. And I thought he was absolutely right, because I can't think of any place where it was, you know, rougher on the people. People being, you know, attacked with fire hoses and dogs and locked up in jails.
It was called Bombingham back then.
Correct. They said yeah. 60 homes. 60 homes were bombed in Birmingham. And so anyway, as I said, it's something that you really think about. And then you have this march that's going to be here in Washington, and it's been repeated, you know, many times, I mean, over the years. And it's been a historical thing. I don't know how much it appears to relevance as to things that are happening today, but certainly I enjoy, reflecting on it and when we actually, you know, go back and do things. And it was one of the interesting things too, was that, the National Archives recently, put on display Martin Luther King's speech.
Yeah.
And in the speech, "I Have a Dream" is nowhere to be found. And the story is that Mahalia Jackson, who, of course, was a wonderful singer that, you know, all of us that are old enough would know, Mahalia Jackson, and apparently she was with Martin Luther King at some event in Detroit earlier, at which he had given this I Have a Dream speech. And she decided he should be talking about that there, and she started saying, Martin, tell them about the dream. And he picked up on it, and that is what we still talk about 60 years later. I have a dream, and it is nowhere in the written speech.
Yeah.
And he went off script, that's right, because it was not written down. He started doing like preachers do. They get this spirit in them and start going for it. So there wasn't a transcript. So they did it after the fact.
Yeah, like most preachers do.
Yeah. But don't forget, Harold, don't forget, the last speech he gave before he passed away on April 4th, 1968, was right here in Washington, D.C., at the National Cathedral. And when he talked about, it's almost like he said, you know, we're going to have a poor people's campaign. We need to come forward. And people like to have a sanitized version of King. But he was active, and he was very unrepentant, and he was very focused. And he did it right here in Washington, D.C. And I got a story about the different churches of D.C.
Well, hold that point, because I've got to take a break. I'll let you finish on the other side. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. Iron Waller in for John tonight, but the Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay with us. This conversation continues. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable discussing the top stories of the week. My guests are Sam Ford, Washington Bureau Chief for WJLA-TV, and Hamil Harris, reporter with the Washington Informer. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tell your tale, Hamil. You were talking about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King during his last months on here in Washington.
And the reason why I tell that story is not just about King, but he had the churches, white and black, from the National Cathedral to the Presbyterian Church, National Presbyterian, to Vermont Avenue Baptist Church, to 10th Street Baptist Church. These were churches, and those ministers were foot soldiers. And they paid the price. And so many times we just want to put him at the Lincoln Memorial and have him dreaming. But I just think, as we see what's happening in the city and so many older church buildings are closing, it breaks my heart sometimes just to think about the church and what it was. And it wasn't about just one man, but it was a group of people who said, when you think about Congressman Funchort and his church, and so many people, and if nothing else, one thing, and I've been sick, but one thing where I will die, if I could, I don't want to, but being at that march and walking, whatever my feet are, because it's so important, Harold. We are people who came, like your daddy, from the South, other places. Sam came, I think, from Kansas. You know, came here because we believed that a government was bigger than just individuals and bigger than people. So that's my little soapbox.
Yeah. Let me go to Barbara calling from Virginia. Barbara, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just called to say that I attended the 65th celebration today.
Oh, yeah.
I spent a little time with my friend, my dear friend, Miss Ali. And the first time I had a Ben's Chili Bowl half smoke, I was 23 years old working for Charlie Rangel on Capitol Hill.
Ooh.
And Bill Cosby spent the day with our office. He was like the celebrity speaker at a hearing that Charlie was chairing. And Bill Cosby said, somebody's got to take me to Ben's Chili Bowl. And he came back with two bags full of food. And that was my first Ben's bite. And it was scrumptious. And today was just lovely. And I'm so proud of Ms. Ali.
Barbara, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I like the fact that you said scrumptious. not delicious, not good. It was scrumptious. I'm here for the scrumptious, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to move on to, this ever-evolving story about district dogs, the flooding, and the tragedy of those dogs who lost their lives a week ago yesterday. You know, Sam, I know you were at the press conference on yesterday. There were some dispatch audio that was released today that really kind of demonstrated the kind of mistakes that were made. And we already knew that this was tragic on the day that it happened, but as things begin to evolve, it just seems worse and worse.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, as long as I've been in D.C., you know, more than 40 years, and I can way back, even before I worked for Channel 7, I remember, you know, hearing horror stories about 911. Back then, I remember this guy calling 911, and the ambulance hadn't come, and he was crying, and they said that the dispatcher told him to grow up.
Yeah, I remember that.
What? You know? And so forever, I thought when the mayor got this guy from Seattle here with the fire chief, I forget his name at the moment, but anyway, and they started a new program where they hired AMR ambulances to assist DC so that they could, you know, DC could focus on the most serious case. I thought that was going to fix it. It didn't fix it. And so in this case, that what we're hearing is that on that Monday, events kind of worked, you know, to make things extremely confusing, because there is that little dip there on Rhode Island Avenue.
Yes.
That floods all the time. And so when it started raining a lot, the fire department just went over there. They didn't have to be dispatched. They just went over there because they knew it was going to be a flood. And it was a flood, and they were busy, you know, getting people out of the water. At the same time, right there is this district dog's place, which flooded last year. But
yeah.
Fortunately, it wasn't as bad. And this time, they're flooded in there, and so you have these manager and assistant manager in Montgomery County, assistant manager in Prince George's County, looking on closed circuit television, seeing things are going wrong. And so they start calling these dispatchers. The dispatchers, and not dispatchers, call takers. That's what they call the call takers. So the call takers write the information in what they call the CAD, and this goes out to the dispatchers, it goes out to the firefighters, it goes out to everybody. Somehow, there's a disconnect there. This desperate information that they're getting doesn't get to the people in the field. Of course, the people in the field are very busy rescuing other people. I mean, fortunately, no humans died, but they had to rescue, I think, 10 people out of cars. So the fire department's extremely busy there. The water's coming up, and it's one of those things where the desperation didn't get to them. The first call came in at about 5:06.
Right, exactly.
And it was 5:23. When the fire department actually, 529. When the fire department actually went to the district dogs to go in and rescue people. So 23 minutes.
But they didn't get inside until 5:35.
Well, and the problem, as the fire chief pointed out, was this. Because the way this thing is built, it's built kind of in this little hillside. There's no back door, right?
Yeah.
And so he said it was a situation where the people inside couldn't get out, and the people outside couldn't get in.
Yeah.
Until the wall collapsed.
Yeah. And there's a bigger story here. There's a bigger story, and again, it's very tragic what happened to those animals. But what I spent time with Bishop Owens, who's the bishop of Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church in that 600 block.
Right up the street.
Right there, right next door.
Yeah.
Right next door. Bishop Owens, and again, said, you know, that 600 block of Rhode Island Avenue has been flooding and flooding. Now, you ask yourself why. And he's tried for years. He can tell you, and it's coming out in the paper, just hold on for 2 days, about all the cars with people in it that were just submerged. It's in a horrible spot. But you ask yourself why, Harold and Sam, because guess what? That where the subway station is, you know, that the bridge and all that stuff, that used to be an African-American cemetery. And that was covered up to build a metro. And when they first built that area, that water flowed down from those hills. And it's just to stay tuned because they're supposed to be building this multi-million-dollar tunnel underneath the 600 block of Rhode Island Avenue that's miraculously under construction and is going to be done soon. But it's been a tragedy waiting for happen. And the sad thing about it, there are a lot of people who live in that community who have given up, including Bishop Owens, will say they don't do anything. They say we're going to work on it, but they never have. This is not nothing new, but now maybe some have changed.
And I think to your point, Hamill, because even in having a conversation about today's program, it was mentioned here that the Rhode Island Avenue is not the only problem. Second and T, down the street from Howard University, has had a problem for about a decade, and that street has never opened up since having a major flooding problem.
You've also got a problem over, because we did a piece on that one too, at Bethesda Baptist Church, which is West Virginia, Mount Olivet. What they're saying is, they were saying last year they would have this thing open by March.
Right.
And now they're saying it'll be open at the end of next month. But the idea is that they have been digging this tunnel. They have a tunnel underground there, which is the same tunnel at Rhode Island Avenue, which is at Mount Olivet near Bethesda Baptist Church. And they say it will hold 90 million gallons of water. And that once this tunnel is open, and it's not open now, but it's going to be open soon, supposedly a lot of this runoff will go into that tunnel. But the tunnel really wasn't constructed for floods. It was constructed to hold wastewater to be treated before it's put back into the system. But nevertheless, they said it should have some effect.
I guess the thing that is most concerning, because there are several stories that have come out of this. And let's start with 911 dispatchers, not just here in D.C., but obviously when people are involved in any kind of operation, there is always room for error. And we have seen, not just with the animals, but as you we've seen in the District of Columbia, where a guy had a heart attack and D.C. Fire and Rescue were dispatched to a wrong place. I mean, is this, we expect, these men and women in these invisible capes to come and rescue us when we call 911. But the reality is that there's always going to be a failure, Sam.
Well, there's going to be a failure sometimes, but at the same time, I think one thing that we really need to have in these agencies is something called concern. A lot of times they just got to go by the book, right, as opposed to being actually concerned about people. Because you were talking about the guy where they sent him to the wrong quadrant of the city, right?
Right.
And the right quadrant was right across the street.
Exactly.
From the firehouse.
Yeah.
And people went over there, and they said, oh, you got to call an ambulance. Now, let's see, that's an attitude, right? If you're concerned about people, if the folks are saying the guy's got a crisis right across the street, why doesn't fire people just walk across the street and treat the man rather than saying, no, you've got to call 911? That is the problem. That is often a problem.
But Sam, can we go to deep to think? We know the bottom line. People don't say what they want to say, but the bottom line is we know that many people say forever this place was Chocolate City, and sometimes folks don't care about the same people that look like them. Now, all of a sudden, things are changing. We know that. And so what's happening is that people have said, why now? It shouldn't be that question. We all should be God's creations, but it hadn't been like that. And a lot of people say, why y'all coming here now? You didn't come for 50 years when other people died on Rhode Island Avenue, like Mr. Medwick, people, Masonic brothers. I mean, it's a lot of pain in this town.
Yeah.
And people want to know why now? Why do you care now all of a sudden? We've been there for 100 years,
So here's a question that I do have that came out of this press conference that I was watching yesterday. One of the things that was kind of said was that the urgency of the
district dog's emergency was not conveyed. But one thing we do know that in all 911 systems, whether it's D.C., Prince George's, Montgomery, California, that 911 dispatchers are trained to be calm. And right. And so how do you, and certainly, as we've heard on the audio, the dispatcher misspoke and said it was a water leak, it was not a flood, but... How do you balance urgency with staying calm?
Well, I think one thing you can stay calm, but use words. Don't say leak. Say flood.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it based on what the people were saying, and you know, it's. I think that's what they need to do. I don't know that, you know, it's a question of being calm. One other thing, and probably in a normal situation, some of these firefighters would have caught this. But this guy, whoever was the dispatcher wasn't. But I mean, here's a sample from a 718 call from inside. Finally, the caller says, "We are trapped in water. We are trapped in water that is above our heads.
Yeah.
There are six people trapped in this water, and we have no way out." And nothing, and then it says inaudible. So, I mean, this is pretty desperate talk. Now, the head, Heather McGaffin, who is the director of 911, said that she thought the call takers all did their jobs properly. They conveyed this information. So then what are we saying, that the dispatchers, you know, because this information goes out on the CAD, right? So the dispatchers have access to it. The firefighters have access to it. So... the other people who got this information just were not, let's say, too busy or what. But obviously there was a definite disconnect. And again, I say a lot of it has to do with the fact that they were in the middle of fighting a situation where human lives were at stake. Well, other human lives were at stake. People possibly drowning in their cars. So they were quite busy.
But Sam and Harold, the bigger picture, too, is the infrastructure of the city. That area has exploded with apartments and condos and everything. How, I covered zoning forever, the Board of Zoning Adjustment. How do you approve high occupancy usage in that area when everybody but Grandma Sookie know that place is flooded?
Well,
and nobody stopped it. So how does that happen?
Well, here's
why don't they scream at the council?
Well, here's the thing, Hamil, and this touches on what I was going to say, and Sam said something about this, and I want to go to the next topics, but I've got to say this. You know how it is, you know, Sam, when it comes to, you know, when I was in television, and there were, in every city that I lived in, we knew, our news desk knew that during inclement weather, there was always someone who said, check this area, because we know that it floods every year. This is where there's going to be the worst situation.
Well, Harold, the fire department was there. They were there.
But they didn't go inside or check, because they were dealing with the cars outside.
Right. I mean, they knew the cars flooded every time. So the fire department didn't even have to be dispatched. They just said, okay, it's raining, let's go over there. And that's what they did. They were there when it happened, but they didn't know about or didn't
the people
think
inside.
About the district dog's place. That's
yeah.
correct. And that was very sad. And, you know, and when you think about it, and some of the dog owners said, there were situations there where dogs were in cages and
yeah.
drowned in cages because there was nobody to let them out.
Yeah. And I suspect that this is not going to be the last word that we hear about this today. I want to quickly turn to a report by the CDC. This is also, you know, tragic, saying that guns are the leading cause of death for kids, with 80% among males 19 and younger. And it also goes on to say black male children were more likely to die, you know, from homicide. All of this, of course, happening in 2021 at the peak of the pandemic. Your thoughts about this, Hamil?
Well, you know, I think about this. We know that number. But you were down in, I think Sam was in Birmingham. The big thing now, they talk about solutions journalism. One solution to this problem is activity for young people. And I will tell you, that Monday Night Football with the Ravens and the
which I'm going to get to, but go ahead.
Okay. But that may be a segue. But it's interesting how the Digital Pioneer Academy, which is brand new, owned by an African-American woman, has taken those kids, adopted by the Commanders and everybody else, and working with youth that have had problems in the inner city. And you see these charter schools cropping up. I never thought about it. But again, what programs do the young people have? We see stats after stats after stats. Okay, tell me what I don't know. But what is the solution? What's the? How can you do that? You know, people walking the street. So again, I'm not surprised. I'm almost numb to it. But again, what you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to talk about stats, or what you going to have a solution?
Yeah. Sam?
I agree with Hamill.
Yeah. Yeah. It is certainly heartbreaking. They are, more likely to die from homicide. I think that story that came about just yesterday about the 12-year-old who was arrested. With a gun. I think the closest I came to a gun when I was 12 was a clear orange water gun.
Clear.
Yeah, transparent. That's about it. Never.
There are subcultures in this city, and
absolutely.
I'm not plugged into them, but the way that kids are carjacking people and pulling guns up, there's a subculture where this is discussed, and so I'm sure sometime it reaches down to 12-year-olds, and it may even reach lower than that, and I don't know how we penetrate that, how we change minds, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I guess as they get younger and younger, I get surprised. I think I'm starting to be both shocked and surprised. 12, you don't hear the four-letter word teen in that. We've been talking 13 and 14 and 15-year-olds, but when you talk about 12. That's prepubescent.
It's sad, Sam. I mean, I lost my car was stolen. My daughter's car was stolen in the past 2 months. And she's still waiting to get her car back. And then right in Northeast D.C., it's like I already took off, and now she took the car we needed. And these are kids because they learn how to do this on TikTok. Is that the best you can do for your summer vacation? Steal somebody's car?
It truly is a sad commentary on where we are. Once again, every day, former President Donald Trump and his co-defendants in the news. He is expected to turn himself in on Thursday. John Eastman, the man who is alleged to have been one of the architects of the accusations of overturning the 2020 election. He turned himself in today in Georgia. Trump is not going to be at the first Republican debate on tomorrow. This story and the former president continuing to suck the air out of the room. But do you think, Sam, that Thursday's appearance is going to be different in some way, shape, or form?
No, not really. I mean, what I've heard is they were taking a poll in Iowa, and Trump's popularity amongst Republicans in Iowa increased after he was indicted.
Right.
And so, it kind of reminds you, I remember back, when Marion Barry was in trouble, and folks talked about how a number of black people rallied around him, as our guy, if you will. And I think that's how a lot of the Republicans are. They consider themselves some sort of a minority, and this is their guy, their hero, and that's who they're rallying around. It's interesting because at one point it seemed that black people were being sort of criticized as being more interested in the man than in justice or whatever. And with this, Trump comes across as the hero of a certain you know, segment of society.
Yeah.
And that's why we need radio so much. You know, I was just thinking about all the ministers who used to have radio shows, and thank God for WHUR. If we don't have a forum like this, how will people know? You can just tune yourself out and listen to your music and fall asleep. But this still stirs up people, and we don't have many outlets like this. Thank God for Sam Ford. Thank God for Harold Fisher, you know?
Yeah, but I would also say that the world has changed.
Has it changed, or we just changed and not care?
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. I think in, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, I don't remember, you know, when I was just kind of starting out in this business, I don't remember any person in my circle of informed people who were not in the business, but just people who wanted to be informed. I don't remember anybody talking about wanting to be tuned out from all of it, whether it was, you know, Bill Clinton, whether it was Jesse Jackson. People wanted to know. They weren't tuning out. But I think now there's so much information out there. And, of course, we have social media where even my friends and associates who consider themselves informed, who say their votes count, whether they're voting for a county council, commission, or president, or anything in between. But some of them, you know, are saying, look, I just don't want to hear about this anymore. Even if it's something that they are truly interested in, I think there is some kind of overload. And I will say this. I remember when I was in Alabama, I will never forget what a guy in Huntsville told me when he found out that I was from Washington, D.C. He said, where you're from, politics is a sport. Where we're from, it's a way of life. And I think that, you know, in some corners, like Sam just said, when you're talking about your guy, whoever your guy happens to be, if your guy or your gal or whatever is being attacked, you're going to hunker down and continue to support it. But I do think that there are some people that they were not hearing from, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out during the voting cycle. Did you see the game last night?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's funny how, again, I just jump in. I'm like at Morgan State, and I teach one class and one here. And it's funny how the people in Baltimore say, okay, that didn't count. Lamar Jackson didn't play. He didn't play. I mean, you guys in D.C. making a big deal out of this. You know, just a. So it's just all who you talk to, you know.
Well, let me say this, because I understand, you know, Hamil, you know, I live in Baltimore.
I know you do.
You know, I live in Baltimore, but I'm from here. And I will say, you know, I'm a Washington fan through and through, period. I like the Ravens. And when they play anybody other than Washington, I'm definitely rooting for them. But I got to tell you, I thought last night was magnificent. I thought both teams played exceptionally well. Sam Howell was great. But you know the thing that really impressed me? Sam, the receivers were catching the ball.
Right. And then, of course, at the end, that must field goal happened. Right.
Right.
I ran into the former council member, Jack Evans, today, and we were just talking about football. Of course, he wants the team back in D.C., right?
Of course.
that is his thing. But he said something that was really important. He says, we are a football town, okay? And, you know, we've had the Nationals win the World Series, right? We've had the Capitals win the Stanley Cup. We've had the Mystics win whatever.
That's right.
But none of that compares to a football team winning in D.C., or at least it didn't. was wild. Those days, I think everybody wants those days back.
Yeah, they do.
And what's beautiful, too, think about it. You saw a game where you had a bunch of millionaires, one of Lamar's making $200 million or something, a contract. You had that. You had the first African-American governor of Maryland who just dropped in to talk to the new owner of the Washington Commanders, and along with Magic Johnson. Think about all the so was. Even an African-American female coach coaching a running back with the Commanders. You know, you got so much history bottled up in one preseason game.
And Harold and Hamill, you got this on this week of the March on Washington, you got to say, we have made progress in this country.
Yes,
if anybody that says that such is crazy.
Right.
At the time of the March on Washington 60 years ago, can you imagine this? No.
No, that's
true. It's unimaginable. So, you know, we have problems. Yes, we have big problems. But let me tell you, the situation is a lot better in this country for black people.
That's right.
Than it used to be.
I mean, look at you, Sam. Look at you, Harold. You look in the skybox. We didn't see who we used to see, but you saw a bunch of D.C. school kids from Digital Pioneer sitting in the skybox, you know, of the stadium. Because, you know, it's just, we are making progress.
Yeah, it is. But that does not mean that we can even in any way, shape, or form be complacent. We got to turn it up.
I agree, but I think at some time we need to stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, I agree. We need to smell the roses, no doubt. I thought it was a fantastic game. I was clapping like it was in the middle of the season. Sam Ford, Hamill Harris, thank you so much for talking to us. I'll be in touch. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, August 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.